great pleasure to introduce our last speaker of the day, Dr. Sheila Davis. Dr. Davis is the Chief Nursing Officer at Partners in Health, an international NGO in 10 countries globally. Sheila has over 25 years of experience working in the HIV/AIDS field and over 13 years working in global health. She is a 2012 RWJ Executive Nurse Fellow and is a frequent speaker on human rights, global health, and infectious disease. Dr. Davis.
Thank you so much. I apologize in advance for my voice, which is nearing the end of the day, and my cold. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Haiti and a little bit about our drive to increase nursing leadership there. I have no disclosures. So Partners in Health is a non-governmental organization, and we're based on providing a preferential option for the poor in the countries where we work. We've worked in Haiti for about 30 years. Paul Farmer is the founder. Most people have heard of him. And we work by establishing relationships with sister organizations that we start in different countries, and our goal is to strengthen the public sector. So we work with the governments of Haiti, Rwanda, and all the countries we work to really look at how do we build infrastructure for health. And our goal is to really push the envelope in providing global health with an equity agenda. So we provide health care about 3 million people worldwide, and we operate about 60 health centers across 12 different countries, and we employ about 14,000 people, the majority of them being community health workers or accompanied tourists, so people who are from the countries that we work. There are only two nurses that work for Partners in Health. I'm one of them, and there's another we just hired, and the rest are all nurses who work in the countries that we work in. So our model is one of accompaniment, and the goal for this is kind of as a different model of providing healthcare, of not just swooping in and parachuting in and doing a providing a system. Is we really accompany or work with the people who are living in the communities that we're working, and working side by side. This, I have to say, is sometimes a more challenging model because it's much easier just to go in and do what you want to do, to be honest, and set your own silo. But that's how much of public health and global health has happened for many years, and why we haven't really had the effectiveness is because it's been done that way. So this is the longer road, but certainly the road that we feel is the best way. So the gaps identified were really under-resourced settings. We really see that a lot of our care, we've been very community-oriented, but we need to have that complete loop, so we need a tertiary care. So I've been at PH only for about 3 years and have really focused on the inpatient setting, because that's a setting that hadn't really been looked at before, because that's kind of nurses' domain in many senses. There was very little funding for inpatient and capacity building for any kind of inpatient care. And most of the in countries we work, most of the places, there's a big disconnect between the didactic, what happens in nursing school, and the actual application in the clinical area. So it was very difficult. Most nurses had never actually worked in a hospital setting other than just observation. No continuing education other than Rwanda is required in any of the countries we work. So once you graduate from nursing school, you never have to have any other education. And there was really no in-country expertise in acute care we found in any of our sites, particularly Haiti. So the goal was, how do we improve quality and deliver it in these secondary and tertiary sites? How do we create a model of accompaniment that builds in-country expertise and decreases the reliance on U.S., Canadian, European, and other countries coming in? And how do we build nursing leadership by expanding the nurse's role? The nurse's role in most places we work is very much like the nursing role in the 50s and 60s in the U.S., and that nurses are very much in a subservient role. So this is Haiti, and this is our current, we have all these sites currently where we work. So the goal, Clinton Bush Haiti Fund post-earthquake funded a family practice residency to build capacity building. And there was no nursing piece of this, and this is when I first started at Partners in Health. So I was able to get in a very small amount of money to start this clinical nurse educator model, because it was obvious to me that just adding more staff to a pretty stretched system, although maybe a minute help, is not going to do anything to build capacity. So we wanted to really draw on this clinical nurse educator model, and I was focused on this one hospital in the Artibonite, which is actually one of the places where cholera had the most outbreak in 2010. So the goal was really to build the capacity. So we found two nurses, Ms. Daphnis and Ms. Ursella, the two nurses there, and who had no training in this but were very motivated and had the right attitude. And 90% of it was finding somebody who had the right attitude. So we kind of trained them on the job and how to be a nurse educator or nurse mentor. So we really look at finding an experienced nurse and how do we make them a mentor or a educator, and how can this person model high-quality nursing care, and really try to give the tools of how to do this in a very scarce resource setting by assessing, prioritizing, educating, and problem-solving. A lot of what we saw was that a lot of what the nurses spend their time doing is addressing systems issues. I think we do that all the time here, but we never really capture that. And that was very much what we found that was part of the nurse's day. So one particular example was a pediatric unit, which was overflowing. And in this particular hospital in Haiti, the emergency room doesn't take pediatric patients. So if there's an emergency patient, this is a 125-bed hospital, they go straight to the inpatient pediatric unit. So you can fathom that it's a chaos like you've never seen. And it was overflowing, and infants were not being evaluated at all, and there was no really clear system of care. And all I heard was about the bad nurses at all the sites that we work, and very much a blaming the nurse system of what I walked into. So we utilized a prioritization matrix, and Julie Anathan, she was a nurse who was doing her MPH integration and came to work with us for 3 months at PIH and really help work with this. And really looked at how do we help someone like Ms. Ursell, who was assigned to the pediatric unit. It's so overwhelming of what to do and it really makes your head spin. So what's the best way that she can have the most impact and not set up this level of frustration that we all feel in working in these under-resourced settings over and over and over again? So really looked at what was happening by interviewing nurses, doctors, the charge nurse, nursing director for the hospital, and this is a public health hospital, as well as the input from the nurse educator herself and her colleague. And really we looked at how to weight this based on how frequent did this happen, what was the importance, what was the feasibility, and what was the cost. So I know you can't read this, but some of the big issues that came up were patients need to be discharged sooner to make room for new patients, insects, roaches in one room, needed new tables approved. New tables were approved, but they hadn't. We hadn't got them in the unit yet. And so by utilizing these problems that came up, she used the prioritization matrix, and we together kind of came up with how we were going to deal with it, knowing that it may not always be, we kind of had to go for the low-hanging fruit in the sense of what did we have control over. We couldn't necessarily control some of the issues, but we could control some of them. So we could look at what was most likely to succeed. So we defined and published the hours that the pediatrician was going to be on the unit, which was a simple thing to do but hadn't been done. Filling the CPR box on a regular basis and establishing a finger stick policy. What we couldn't do, and which was the most difficult to succeed, was not enough beds, not enough nurses, not enough physicians. All these big issues that we know that we're trying to address on a systems level, but to have the nurse educator be able to work on one or two things within this prioritization matrix will allow her to feel some success and for us to kind of move things along. So the challenge is certainly a lack of staffing, a lack of knowledge, lack of skills, lack of motivation, and very much these systems issues. And part of what we're capturing is how much time the nurses are spending on the systems issues. So we can educate and mentor all we want about infant resuscitation, but if there's no oxygen there, if there's no equipment there, it's kind of a pointless thing. So we really are capturing how much time they're spending addressing those systems issues. One, because I'm always fearful that we're going to lose these positions, so I want to be able to prove that they're also addressing the systems, not just educating the nurses. This was a big culture change to have positions specifically related to not staff, but of capacity building for staff. So really getting the point across that nurses look at the entire system and we're problem solvers had never been articulated within our large system. So really looking at how much time they spend a day addressing these systems issues has been critical for us. So she, this is Mr. Assel, and really has been very successful. A lot, again, not, she certainly doesn't have any formal training in this other than what we've been able to give her, but innately embraced this role and did a wonderful job. And really look assess the base of nurses on the unit by working with them and really tried to address the issues of getting oxygen on the unit at all times, which seems like a simple thing, but is very, very difficult, as well as a lot of things. She, when I was last in Haiti about 2 weeks ago, she told me a story of, in the labor and delivery ward, she also covers labor and delivery, there was a woman who had come in with preeclampsia and was kind of, it sounds like she was semi-conscious and was out of it, and the nurses and the family were holding her down, and so she was thrashing and everything, and Mr. Assel came in and went to the patient and said, you know, you're okay, you're in the hospital, it's the nurses and your family that are here with you, and really talked to her and calmed her down, was able to turn a really horrific situation for the family to see their family member be tied down to not ideal for her or for anybody around her as well as the nurses. And by just modeling that, talking to a patient who's semi-conscious and talking to an agitated patient really changed the situation from a horrible situation to a good situation. Is not a high-tech solution, but changed the outcome for this patient and obviously for everybody around them. So that was what she identified as one of her successes, and I certainly agree. So these are just the number of trainings we're doing in the different areas, and it ranges from certainly A to Z. And we've really tried to look at, rather than just asking nurses to collect this information, we use it in a quick feedback turnaround. So we can say we do a dashboard every month of how much time they spend doing things, what kind of trainings they do, are they bedside, are they individual, are they unit, are they hospital-wide, and we sit down and go over this with them all the time. So they see that they're collecting the data and actually us being able to look at it and say, wow, you spent a lot of time at hospital-wide, maybe this next month we should concentrate on one-on-one trainings. So the connection between collecting the data and having it being used for decision-making, I think, has been important. So the key messages, certainly for us in implementing this role, was nurses serve in education and mentorship roles. We definitely see them as mentors and educators. And nurses are really well positioned to address the gaps in the system. Building capacity at the bedside will improve patient outcomes. And really this provided some role opportunity for nurses that if you didn't want to become the head nurse or the nurse manager, there was no place to go. So this is giving nurses a career path that is beyond just moving to management and still allows nurses to be at the bedside. So in Rwanda, quickly, we have a different scenario where we looked at a clinical nurse educator model, and this is in Butaro in the north. And again, we work closely with the Rwandan Ministry of Health. And with a really strong partnership with Dana-Farber Cancer Institute here in Boston, we have developed this National Cancer Center in rural Rwanda, and the catchment area is about 250,000. No oncology expertise, no oncologists at all in the country, and so therefore no oncology nurses in the country. So we developed a strong partnership with Dana-Farber, and very experienced nurses go for 3 months at a time, and they become, we had to call them fellows because of the union issues, but they agreed to a lesser salary for those 3 months, And they, Dana-Farber fundraised for this, and they go and spend 3 months as a company tours in Haiti developing as nurse educators and mentors to how to do delivery of safe oncology care in Haiti. And really has made a huge, huge difference, and we actually have this in Haiti as well. In Rwanda and Haiti as well. So with this as well, the nurse and mentors and educators, there's biweekly calls for support and development of materials and tools. So even though there was one mentor in country, it was very much a team because every 2 weeks we would talk as a group. So it was really, although there were four different people that went, there was a lot of continuity between what our focus was. And we really partnered, identified some Rwanda nurses to become our oncology nurse educators. And they have remained stable and are very positive about this career growth. We've had challenges of, we've trained a lot of other people that there's been a lot of turnover within the public health system, but these key positions have stayed, so we're really building in-country expertise. So we're doing an ongoing evaluation and formal training components, and we're going to be training oncology nurses for the entire country that will be coming and doing a three-month rotation at Butaro, which the Ministry of Health is coordinating with us. This is just the outside of our oncology clinic. So for the whole model, we opened a new hospital in Haiti, a big 316-bed hospital in Mirabelle, Haiti, and we're really developing specialty nurse educators in NICU and surgery and in a lot of areas by, again, identifying in-country people and working with them to develop these skills. We just hired a general clinical nurse educator for Rwanda to start to build on these in our hospital system. And we've received funding to build this mentorship program in our far outside health centers in Haiti. And the goal, again, is to really look at quality improvement and system challenges. These are just a lot of the collaborators, and certainly we're a very lean but strong nursing team in all of Partners in Health sites, and truly a testament to this amazing, amazing nurses that work all over the world, and I certainly am honored to be able to spend time with them and learn from them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Davis. I must say this has been an absolutely outstanding panel of presenters. Now I'd like to open it up for some questions from the audience.
Okay, I have one.
Okay, Liz.
I have a question for Dr. Chaudhry.
Dr.
Chaudhry. Okay. Does Ohio have a unified state health department that generates any of the position descriptions that then flow down?
No.
So it's not centralized?
No.
Okay.
It's not centralized at all. And so currently there's some movement, and Rosemary's working on some of these things in Ohio, to have some, to put out some position descriptions that are somewhat standardized, but every local health department, of which there are 124, does their own thing.
My follow-up question then is the medical directors and the local health department administrators, do they have any public health expertise?
Does the medical director of the local health department? It depends. Sometimes they do, sometimes they're
whoever's available.
Yeah. Most of them have a director of nursing, they all have health commissioners and a director of nursing. It's decentralized. The Ohio Department of Health serves more as a consultant and these kinds of things. So, I don't see anybody else from Ohio. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I could go on.
Yeah.
You said you were surprised by some of your findings. I was, and I've worked in local public health, and we don't have a lot of standardization, and and I was even curious in terms of the categories. Were those more, when they talk assessment, is it population focused?
If it was individual assessment, it was not considered assessment. There are, and they're in here, health histories and doing individual assessment.
Yeah.
No, this was population.
Okay.
Looking at the ANA standards and the essential services, it is a population.
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
I have two questions for two of the panelists. I'll start with Sheila. I'm curious to hear about how the other healthcare practitioners in Haiti and Rwanda have responded to the nurse mentoring. What's worked, what's been challenging, both, you know, from other nurses, from doctors. I'm just curious to know.
Yeah, I think it's been a process. I think we learned from our first site where we didn't really introduce their role well that that was probably not a good idea. So we quickly remedied that for our other sites where we rolled them out. And I think once they've kind of proven their worth, then they're very much now, like Ms. Russell, for example, she covers, you know, four different services. They all want her all the time. But it took a while for her to kind of to be seen as valuable. And the biggest challenge was making sure they weren't pulled for staff.
Right.
And we really had to draw the line. And I, you know, really said we can't because of the funder. So I was able to fall back on that because they wanted, the administration really much wanted to pull them for staff and didn't see them as valuable. But now over time they've been seen as valuable. But it's been a challenge. But a really quick uptake in that now the physicians who have worked at one of our hospitals, you know, have gone to another area and they've asked, can we have a nurse educator? So I think it's been slowly, but I think it's happening. And same thing in Rwanda.
It sounds like probably because of your, like, real, all the data collection that you've done, I would imagine that's been helpful thing to kind of prove the work and prove.
Yeah, that was kind of more for our own administration for funding purposes, but I think individually nurses were initially didn't quite know who this was, and they were both really well known. They were nurses in that system, and we plucked them from that system, which had positives and negatives. But I think by them really showing their value and being seen as not being punitive, but being working with them side by side has made them invaluable, I think, to the nursing unit.
Thanks. My other question was for Deborah. I know you touched a little bit on the fact that the importance of the interdisciplinary relationships and just being able to collaborate and kind of see the bigger picture is such an important part, and that we public health nurses really understand and embrace, but the fact that students aren't taught that in nursing school at all. I'm sure there's probably some other people in this room who can share the experience that I had in nursing school of being the only one who really liked the public health nursing class. and to everyone else, it was kind of seen as like, oh, this is I'm wondering if you have some ideas about how, like, from your project, have any ideas come as to what that could look like?
Yeah.
Have any teams talked about that?
Interesting. I mean, I confess I'm a relative newbie as faculty, my most recent clinical rotation had just the opposite experience with the students. They came in thinking, what you're reporting, we have to do this in California, required. And they came out saying, wow, I really like this. This is really great. I can see myself doing it.
You must be a great professor.
No, I don't actually credit myself with a fabulous cohort of students, but I think that by giving real-life examples, getting them out there in the community, and really pushing their boundaries to see how we're all interrelated and connected makes a huge difference. We also rotated them a little bit through their clinical experiences, so they weren't always just doing standard home health nursing, and that helped them rub shoulders with social workers and mental health support people. Yeah, it was more interdisciplinary, but I have lots of ideas also for the future, and a particular project we're thinking about doing in Stockton, which was one of the first cities in America, major cities, to declare bankruptcy. So there's major issues in that. And I didn't mean to imply that it's not being done, because I'm sure that there are, and I'd love to hear any educators here who are weaving in that cross-sectoral collaboration, ultimately leading to leadership. I'd love to hear about what other people are doing, what's working out there. That would be great.
Any other questions? Yes, please.
I have a question for Deborah also. I was really interested in the Centers for Health Leadership and Practice,
uh-huh.
and I was just wondering
definitely be welcomed. If you have an idea and you have a team you can pull together, I encourage you to do it, because they're definitely looking across the spectrum, not just for very experienced, high-level leaders, but they're looking for people across spectrums. But the thing that's important is that it truly be multi-sector collaboration, and that you have something very specific that you want to use in your actual project. And then we have a discussion.
Other questions? Yes. I think you have a comment.
Sure. I'm Sharon Moffett, and I'm from the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. So I can connect you with, we have a very detailed analysis of what we do on the structure and the variety of disciplines. And then also we can connect you with the Association of Public Health Nurses.
Yes.
Which used to be
ASTDN. Yeah. Yeah. Rosemary?
I wouldn't say this is going to address structure. However, one level of education we have is accreditation. As more and more state and local tribals become accredited, that's focusing on what you do, processes. So that will be one way to start looking at comparing, having based on the
Hey, Deborah?
I have a question.
Yes. Well, in order to stay on time, it is 4, but I'd like to give a round of applause to our presenters.